Bang bang.
Hello and welcome to Fang Bangers Podcast. We're chaotic, horny friends rewatching the chaotic, horny HBO series True Blood. I'm Tasia.
And I'm Melissa.
This week we're discussing Season 2, Episode 9, I Will Rise Up. This episode originally aired on August 16th, 2009. It was written by Nancy Oliver and directed by Scott Winant. And then we have a summary here from Wiki, as usual. Vampires and humans clean up the aftermath of the explosion. Eric tricks Sookie into drinking some of his blood, much to Bill's dismay. As a result of the lapse in security, Godric's leadership falls under review, but his response surprises everyone, especially Eric, who begs him not to go through with his plan. In Bon Temps, Marianne is out to find Sam Merlot and complete the ritual sacrifice. She casts a spell on everyone in Sam's bar to get them to look for him. Lafayette and Tara's mother forcibly remove her from Sookie's house. Hoyt and Jessica get used to their situation, and Hoyt decides it's time to introduce his true love to his vampire-hating mother. So, what were your first impressions of this episode?
This is such a good episode. This is such a big one.
It is.
I like it so much, and it's especially fun because I feel like it really swings from, like, wow, this is an especially funny episode, to wow, I am emotionally devastated. Just mm-hmm. so smoothly. You can hardly tell it's happening until it's too late. And there's just a lot of good character, like depth of character stuff that will be interesting to discuss. Lots to explore.
Yeah, I totally agree. We were talking a little bit off air about this, but like, I'm just so happy that I am on this episode because I am a noted Godric stan. But yeah, I think you're totally right that this has like, it's really well paced, and it does take you from like the classic like silliness of True Blood to just absolute devastation, but without whiplash. Like, it just, it flows really well, and it hits a lot of really good emotional notes that we're not necessarily used to getting from True Blood, I think. Like, this is obviously a kind of silly, campy, soapy show, and I think we get a lot of, like you said, emotional depth in this one that we don't always get from True Blood.
Yeah, and it's crazy there's three more episodes in the season. Not that this episode was wrapping stuff up, but so much has happened, and so much, there's been so many emotions to experience. Mm-hmm. It just seems wild that there is three more hours to the season.
Yeah.
Even yeah, after this, like- this emotional... Mm-hmm. Like, I want to say emotional high, but that's not exactly what I mean. I just mean, like, a high level of effective emotions mm-hmm. for the characters and for us as the audience.
Yeah, like you said, it feels like a big episode. It almost feels like it should be, like, a penultimate episode or something. Because, like you said, it doesn't wrap anything up, but it does feel, like, really big and really important and kind of, yes. like, leading into our final countdown.
Yes, I totally agree. It's so exciting. I mean, the show's great.
Yeah. All right, so should we just get into our various plot points?
Yes, yes.
All right, so let's start with Sookie, Godric, Eric, that whole situation.
Yeah, the Dallas situation.
Yeah, Dallas.
This episode opens... in the moments before the last episode ended. I thought that was kind of notable too, that, you know, we saw these seconds of the opening in the last episode, but they want you to be really sure that we are just doing a continuation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was quite a cold open in a show that is full of like very dramatic cold opens and very mm-hmm. dramatic cliffhangers. Like that was a big one.
Yeah, and the destruction from this bomb is, like, of course, devastating, but it's way less vampires killed than Luke hoped. There is loss of life. I think the count is, like, three vampires and two humans, or maybe I have that backwards. But in the grand scheme of things, it's not that much. Like, Luke did all of this for not nothing, but
for very little. I mean,
you know,
I
think he really thought he was going to kill every one of those vampires in the house.
I feel like that's such a like a hallmark of Luke as a character, though. Like, he always thinks he's doing the most when he's just an ineffectual little pimple on the ass of this stupid organization. At the very least, he takes out Stan, which, I mean, he is the self-proclaimed, like, arbiter of like, the destruction of the Newland family. So, you know, I guess...
Yeah, he got
if you're
it right
going,
there.
If you're out for revenge, you got the main guy that was responsible for that. So,
and
well done, I guess.
Bomb gives Eric the opportunity to save Sookie, which
always
is just
be scheming.
Truly incredible. He says, like, get the humans to Bill after Bill realizes that Eric and Sookie are still alive. And my dumbass thought that he meant, like, save the remaining humans, not, like, go, like, get them. So that wasn't intentionally funny, but I got a real kick out of that because I was like, Melissa, why would you think that Eric was...
Because he's putting on this whole sacrificial martyr act. Like, ugh. And it's just fabulous to me that, like, he has less than a second. He's got, like, a couple of milliseconds to be like, this place is about to blow up. I better jump in front of Sookie and protect her so that she can then suck silver bullets out of me. And then I will have, like, a blood connection to her that I can use to my advantage. Like, all of this goes in through his mind in a millisecond. And then as he's laying there, like, that little shit-eating grin on his face is just, he's a rascal. He's perfection.
He is. My notes during my watch were verbatim, Eric, you little shit. Like, I love you. Yeah. And then I kept in my notes having to say, like, because my notes are always, like, very stream of consciousness. It's more like, it's not just, like, bullet points, you know, it's just, you know, random bullshit, but... I kept, like, typing, like, I know this is very bad, but it's very funny to me. Like, I'm so sorry that I'm loving this so much because I know that this is bad and Eric shouldn't do this.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just so funny.
It's fun, you know?
It is fun. And the other,
just gotta lean into it.
The other thing that makes it a little difficult to deal with, like, actually how bad of a thing this is for Eric to do to Sookie, is that it's like he wouldn't have had to convince me to suck the silver bullets out of his chest. Like,
maybe this is why we don't have vampires knocking down our door, is because we're too available. We need to want it less.
Yeah, no kidding. Sookie's doing her, like, hilarious no cursing Sookie shit. She says, like, oh, you son of a mother, and, like,
would she call him, like, a lying a-hole?
Yeah, Bill's like you'll be able to feel all, because he's so mad only Bill can feel Sookie's emotions, but you know, he's saying, like, you'll be able to feel her emotions now. And Sookie's screaming at him, you big lying a-hole. And Eric is just deadpan, like, you're right, I can feel her emotions.
And he's got zero, and I mean, this is Eric, so obviously, but he's got, like, zero shame at being caught out.
He
and, like,
does
Sookie
not
being so
care.
Pissed. And he's just laying back, just so satisfied. So self-satisfied. It's great.
Well, Bill mentions later in the episode that Eric was determined to force this bond with her. So, you know, who knows what Eric is capable of. Like, this is one way to do it. It sucks because Sookie's out there being like, I'm so stupid, I can't believe this happened. And it's like, Sookie... Not one of us we're gonna be like having our wits about us in the face of like a potentially dying Eric Northman. It just wasn't happening.
Right.
Give yourself a break.
He literally took bullets for you, so like it's not such a leap to be like, I should do something outrageous for him, like suck said bullets out of his chest. What a weird
So Sookie and Bill are having this conversation later in the hotel about like, I'm so stupid, and is she just like tripping on Eric's blood?
She just feels goofy for getting caught up in the moment, but like Bill says, like, that is absolutely not her fault. She was it was a high stress
And like moment maybe, for everybody. I mean, we've already basically determined that like your mindset when you do the V affects if you get to have a psychedelic trip or not. So Sookie didn't want this, so she's not doing drugs. She's just feeling embarrassed.
Yeah. I love the fallout from this when Bill is like, don't be surprised if you feel some attraction to Eric now. And I'm like, and her being like, ew, Eric, never. And
never. It's impossible.
Be so serious right now. Eric Northman looks like Alexander Skarsgård, number one.
What do you
like,
mean?
And number two, you don't have to like someone as a person to be attracted to them. Like, we are not children. Let's be real. Let's be so for
absolutely
real right now.
Absolutely not. Yeah, because Sookie says, like, I can't stand him. And I, in my notes, I wrote, like, Sookie, it doesn't matter if you can stand him. Like, you can look at him. You have eyes. Mm-hmm. And, like, enemies to lovers is a thing.
Yeah.
I don't see what the problem is. That's the problem this with is just me a watching case this of episode.
Right, exactly. We are possibly not the like in line with Sookie's thought process here. But yeah, like I think Sookie and Bill are just 1,000% lying to themselves in this moment. Like, oh, now there's going to be an attraction. There has always been an attraction on both sides.
Yeah, it's incredible. And like we do get a little break from this onslaught of Eric, because Sookie and Jason have this really nice long overdue brother sister talk about how, you know, they're their only family, like they need to stick together. I love how Sookie says, like, we gotta grow up. I love also that Sookie tells Jason that, like, he's not dumb, he's just lazy. Like, you need to use your brain. You need to put some effort into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been like resting on his looks, and like he lists all these things: my looks, my football ability, my sex ability, all these other things. And it's been too easy for him, really, because he hasn't had to use his brain for anything. He's gotten everything that he wanted until now. But I do. So there was that awful scene from last season where he hit her at their grandmother's like wake, and in that moment, and I've seen this show multiple times obviously, but in that moment I'm always like, I will never forgive Jason Stackhouse for that. But it's this, like, now that I'm watching for, like, you know, with a more like critical lens or whatever, it is this moment that actually does make me finally forgive him, because they really have this, like you said, long overdue heart to heart. And in the last few episodes, you've seen him, like, really come to Sookie's defense. Like, the second anyone brings up his sister, he's, like, throwing hands. So he's come a long way, even as he's doing stupid shit, like, joining, like, a racist church. But he's still in there. There's still good in him, like Sookie says, so.
Yeah, and he says that he's going to try to use his brain, so hopefully they will just be nice siblings going forward. Jason also wishes that Sookie would cook more for him, so we'll see if they're going to implement, like, family dinner.
Yeah, well, I guess they'll have to see what the situation is when they get back
home. No shit, if the house is still standing.
Right.
They also watch Steve and Sarah on the news talking to Nan Flanagan, and it is just so funny. Like, they are bickering in the telecast with each other. Even Nan is, like, deadpan looking at the camera, like, how do you have a conversation with these people?
While Steve is sporting his fresh paintball bruise right between his eyes.
Oh, my God. It's so funny. And then Sarah tells Steve that she hates his hair, and his face is like, oh, what? Yeah, and then you know, we're just back with Sookie. She is having naked Eric dreams, and he is putting his face
along
on
with the rest of us,
and I'm like, literally kill me, I can't watch this.
It is. So my only note for that whole scene is just that I'm, like, giggling and kicking my feet. Because literally that's all it is. It's just like,
Exactly. It's too
much. I love
much.
It. I love it. Really is. Listing himself as one of like the people that she loves, and it's just they have chemistry, man.
I can't
they
deal
just
with
do.
It. Could you imagine? We do not have to go on a tangent about this because we will have so many opportunities to cover this anytime we want to and at a later date. Could you just imagine being like Stephen Moyer in this situation?
I know. When did he and Anna Paquin get together? Like, they must have already been like at least dating, right?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure, although that would be fun to piece that timeline together, especially in later seasons when Sookie's life looks a little different.
Didn't they also have like a Rolling Stone cover with the three of them naked and covered in blood? Like, iconic. Yes. Number one, iconic. I want that framed in my house. I guess they, you know, they have a very secure relationship.
Because just I was thinking about it a lot, especially like at the end of this dream scene, because the coloring in the scene is so warm and it just looks so cozy and just like lovely and enticing, and then she's back in bed with Bill and it's like cool tones and like he's dead in the bed, so it's not that romantic.
And I feel like the choice to have her like close her eyes at the end of that scene is like intentional. It almost feels like going back to sleep intentionally to go back to dreaming.
Yeah.
I could just be reading it with like my shipper sensibilities, 100%. Being somebody who really likes the Eric Sookie dynamic, but you know, that's how I read it.
I don't know. Like, seriously, I can't talk enough about Eric putting his face all over Sookie's hand. Like, it's how could I ever ship anyone again, ever? But her Eric dream is being haunted by Lorena, which is kind of interesting because I like the dream, I think, is influenced by the blood, but like the Lorena part isn't. So that means like the dream isn't completely influenced by the blood. So there is some truth here, I think.
Well, and do you think like Lorena represents her guilty conscience about the dream she's having?
Yeah, I think it's possible. I think it's possible. Or just I mean, she's definitely like the Bill representative, but I just think it's interesting that it is Lorena and not Bill in the dream. And one last note about this is she talks to Eric about like how, oh, like you're this and that and the other thing and there's love in you. And he says only for Sookie. And then later in the episode, we see that that's not true because he has love for Godric. And I just think that's an interesting thing to think about together. More Eric. Let's do it. I'm ready.
Just
explore some more.
I think next we have them. They're all like we see Nan, which I think is really fun. Because all this whole time we've always seen Nan. I think she was there from the very first episode as like the vampire PR like representative. And you know, she always looks very, I would say almost like a 1960s like housewife put together. You know, she's got these like Chanel suits and, you know, perfectly coiffed hair and everything. And then when we see real Nan, she's got her hair slicked back. She's wearing like a power suit. She's about the business and she's a totally different person. And I just kind of love that we see like how much of a mask that she has to put on in this like performance that she has to give in order to present this like very non-threatening vampire representation.
She's even telling off Godric. Nan does not care. And I love that about her. And I love when she's like, I'm on TV, so I'm in charge.
Yeah, you just get the sense like she's a shark, you know, and I love that. Because it's so, like, anti her public image.
Yeah, Godric is gonna I mean, she wants Godric to step down, and Godric is willing to step down. So that's kind of how that whole thing resolves. He is no longer going to be holding any positions of power, which has to do with, you know, he gave himself up to the Fellowship.
Yeah.
And he did that because he knew that the Fellowship was going to take a vampire eventually. And he thought that he could, like, stop this violence before it got out of hand by doing this. I mean, that I will take that at face value, but this man's just idea of, like, humanity and himself is just very warped. Because he's been alive for 2,000 years, and that's really painful for him. But to think that giving himself up was not just going to stoke more bloodlust up out of the Fellowship of the Sun, like, Godric, my guy, I'm so sorry. Like,
it's flawed logic. It's like, ultimately pretty short-sighted. But, you know, he is operating as a person who is suicidal, essentially. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
you know, he's clearly not thinking things through in the long term. So, and yeah, so I have this in my later notes about Godric and his scenes later on. But so I was looking it up, and so Godric is supposed to be like a teenager when he makes Eric and all, you know, or when he was created as a vampire. And the actor playing him was 20 years old. And I think that is just wild because like, you look at him and he obviously looks really young, but he, like, at the performance carries so much weight. Like, I don't look at him and see like a teenager or a 20-year-old. I look at him and I see this just kind of ancient, melancholy being that has just existed for too long and is tired. And I feel like he carries that performance really well. And that's really important because that final scene with him is a really big one.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's kind of crazy. Excuse me. It's kind of crazy to hear that he was only 20 when they filmed this. It's a really powerful performance, especially with how little of Godric as a character we actually get. And I mean,
how sure much of an impression he makes.
Yes, that's because exactly.
He's still one of the first people I think of. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, we'll probably hammer this point home even more, but it's like this character and this performance especially, like, leaves such a deep impression when you watch this show.
He just looks and carries himself like someone who is burdened with thousands of years of life. And I think it's part of the writing, and I think we'll talk about it later. But, like, this is kind of a slight departure from the books, like, character-wise, I think, from what I remember anyway.
Yeah, I have notes on that.
The characterization of him. But I think it's a vast, vast, vast improvement from what I remember. And I think that, yeah, it's part of the writing that they did for him and a lot of the performance.
Yeah. Sookie wants to... Like, Godric tells Eric that they can talk about this on the roof. And Eric would like to do that because he really has a desire to make, like, direct eye contact with Godric right now. And Sookie is like, I need to go be with Godric. And Bill does not get this. I mean, he does eventually.
Yeah.
He, like, comes around to it.
But, like, in the beginning, he's like, none of this has anything to do with us. Godric is none of your concern. But, like, I feel like he's kind of showing his ass there with the lack of, like, understanding and the lack of human compassion and him not being able at first, at least, to fathom why Sookie would be so concerned about another person, even though that person saved her life multiple times and treated her with nothing but respect. Because all Bill is feeling in that moment, all he cares about in that moment is his jealousy about Eric. Like Godric is like, come up, you know, come to the roof or whatever and we can talk. You see Eric is like on the verge of just having some sort of like emotional breakdown. And Bill chooses that moment to confront him about the Sookie thing. Just zero he's unable to read the room, you know, like give it. Come for your revenge later. Like, this is not the time.
Well, yeah, and like Eric basically says, like, he does not say this sentence, but he says it's done. So what's the point? Like, yeah, punch me in the face. I have bigger concerns right now. And also, we're not undoing this. Like, you do not have the power to undo this. So get used to it, basically.
Yeah, and I don't want to say, like, oh, what Eric did is totally excusable or whatever. No. But I think it makes Bill look really petty to come after him, like, now. When, if Sookie can pick up on the, like, undertones of that scene, then surely Bill could if he wanted to.
Yeah, because I wouldn't say that we don't know if Sookie is over, quote unquote, like, what happened with Eric. But she definitely is not focused on it right now. Like, her main concern is her drive for, like, empathy and to be with Godric. Because she knows that he needs someone. And, like, she even comforts Eric. Like, she reassures Eric that Godric won't be alone. So, I think, you know, if Sookie can put her feelings aside for, like, the right thing to do emotionally. Because even if she doesn't like Eric, she doesn't love him, there's no love lost between Bill and Eric. Like, these people are not getting rid of each other. So, I mean, this is one of the best. Sookie, there's a lot of things about Sookie that I don't think are the best. But one of the things that is the best is, like, she will put things aside to, like, do what she thinks is the right thing to do. Especially with people in, like, an emotional state. Like, what she thinks is the, like, emotionally correct thing to do for someone else. And I just think that that is really powerful as a character.
I was literally thinking the exact same thing. I was like, there's, you know, Sookie has a plenty of flaws. She's very judgmental. She's got all these other issues. But I do think that her compassion is one of the best things about her. And I think Bill just comes off really petty and small in that scene. And like, and that's the thing, he's acting like this is something that was done to him. Like, he doesn't consult Sookie, how do you feel about this? Should I go beat up Eric? Like, is that something that would make you feel better? He's doing what makes him feel better. About her. This is something that happened to her, not him. It's something that happened to him.
Theme of the episode, but it is interesting that we have, like, flavors of this same dynamic happening later when Lafayette goes to Sookie's house to get Tara, because immediately Eggs is like, well, she's my girl, why don't you talk to me? And it's like, no. Yeah. Like,
and that's so weird to me, because that the implication there is that, like, that connection is even stronger than the connection she has with Lafayette, who is her fucking family. Like, who are you, man? You've been here for 5 minutes.
Yes. But more on that later. When Sookie finally, like, I had in my notes, like, convinces Bill to let her. And it's like, Sookie does not need permission, but if Bill wanted to stop her, he could. So it is still kind of like that. Bill, they share a kiss, and it is just so chaste compared to anything we've seen between them before. And especially with, like, against the kiss that her and Eric had in the dream. And I also thought that was interesting.
It's a fun little contrast.
Like, I don't know. I feel like this episode is trying to convince me of something.
I think we're already convinced. I think we're trying to convince ourselves that the episode is making this happen instead of us, our own brains. All right. So we follow Eric and Godric to the roof. And I want this just tattooed on my brain. This entire scene is really... it's one of, like, the standout scenes, I think, of the entire show. Also, Eric crying over Godric, begging him not to kill it. Oh, my God. I am unwell for, like, the entire scene, this entire thing.
Yeah, like, especially because Eric is so physically large compared to Godric, so the visuals of him, like, crumpling down to his knees to try to convince this person to, like, stay with him, it is nearly too difficult to contemplate. Like, it's such a beautiful scene. Alexander Skarsgård is such a good actor. And mm-hmm. these characters, oh man, I know I wrote it down. Let me try to find the line. Godric says, centuries of faith and love between us. And that is just the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. And I love this show taking the time to really give that kind of relationship between two men space, mm-hmm. And weight,
mm-hmm.
and how much like love they have for each other. It's really beautiful. It's really, it's just the whole thing is entirely devastating. Yeah. And like I said earlier, like this show is silly a lot of the times, but I think this scene is proof that it is capable of real depth.
Yeah, because I mean, Eric has to leave, the sun's gonna come up, and this is where Sookie, Eric doesn't want Godric to be alone. Godric would be fine with that, but Eric wouldn't be, and Sookie's mm-hmm. there. So I also kind of had the thought, like, is Sookie there for Godric or is Sookie there for Eric? Like, did Eric's blood have something to do with her drive to like go out here for this moment? I don't really think that that's true, but I did think it. Like, I do think that Sookie's primary drive here was to be there for Godric, but in that she also is quite reassuring to Eric.
Mm-hmm.
And to Godric, because he asked her about God.
Yeah, that whole, do you believe in God? Yes. If you're right, how will he punish me? Like, my note here is just crying in the club.
Yeah, no kidding. Sookie
crying over Godric is just beautiful. Another just, like, amazing testament to her character that she could feel such empathy and compassion for somebody that she barely knows. Somebody that she knows means a lot to somebody else that she knows, it's mm-hmm. His, and then he sees her crying over him and he says 2,000 years and I can still be surprised in this. I see God.
It's just,
I am going to launch myself into the sun forthwith. Fare thee well.
Yeah. It's really, really beautiful.
Yeah.
And this is the end of the episode. Is Godric happy finally ending his existence, and that's it. Like, he just is gone and that's the end of the episode. It's not a cliffhanger. I think the episode really leaves space for that to breathe.
Yeah. It places the right amount of weight on it, I think, because to end it on any other note after that would feel just inappropriate, I think.
Mm-hmm. I agree, but we put this episode out of order.
I know, so we should have,
so we're gonna
saved
continue.
the biggest we should have saved the biggest part for the end, but we are not as well paced as True Blood. Ooh. Our apologies.
Yeah, Tara and Eggs and like Marianne and Lafayette, they're all doing stuff.
So the other stuff.
Yeah. Tara and Eggs are just beat to shit after last episode and they have no memories. And Marianne is mad
just at fully
them
gaslighting
for not caring. Like, or no, mm-hmm. she's mad at them.
Mad at them for
caring. For caring.
Yeah.
That they,
for having the audacity to be concerned,
yes,
that they are blacking out and apparently beating the shit out of each other.
Tara doesn't want to be out of control. She doesn't want to be blacking out. She doesn't want this chaos. And Marianne goes into this like whole, like, honestly, very emotional speech. Her like voice is breaking about how the blackouts are moments of higher consciousness, and you have to dissolve into the infinite. Like, I can hardly even say that.
Yeah.
So that you can be reunited with God. And it's like, God, Marianne, like, you really think so highly of yourself.
Yeah. And Tara, and I think a part of her knows this, that she's really become like that frog in the pot of boiling water, mm-hmm. You know, like that temperature has just been turned up so slowly and just in these increments. And now she is boiling and there's nothing she can do about it.
Yeah. And, you know, the whole town is out of control. Half the town is still in the jail. Bud Dearborn hasn't slept in days. And Merlot's is out of control. Arlene and Lafayette are the only people who work there. Oh, and Terry, my apologies. I'm so sorry. I forgot you, King. But Arlene is, like, struggling at work. Snapping at everyone. She looks frazzled. Her and Terry, like, when we first get into Merlot's, her and Terry haven't figured out like what happened between them, but I'm really glad we get to see that conversation because I think it's really nice and I am obsessed with them.
Yeah, same.
And I love her crying and saying like, quit being more peculiar than normal. Yeah. He's like, I didn't mean to act peculiar at you.
Yeah, he like rushes to comfort her, reassure her. It's really nice.
Yeah.
Especially with how stressed she has been about that night.
And, like, obviously they did not, like, enthusiastically consent to having sex with each other in that moment. I do hope that now that, like, Terry knows that they likely did do it, it will be easier for him to maybe do it in the future because it seems like they're both very interested in being conscious.
Well, it kind of, like, broke the ice on it, yeah. Right? Like, once it's already been done, even if they don't remember it, then there's, like, less pressure.
And or, now like, they're talking about it and, yeah, so I just want good things for them. I think they're so cute together.
Yeah. Me too. So then we get a pretty iconic scene, I think, with Lafayette and Letty Mae busting into Sookie's house on Marianne and Tara and Eggs.
Eggs and Marianne come to Merlot's and Lafayette has a problem with that. And so, yeah, he brings Letty Mae to Sookie's house.
WWE SmackDown.
Yes. And it's crazy that he brought Letty Mae there, but that's how serious he is. Because he would not do that to Tara unless I think that he felt that it was like life or death for her. And he does. And he says something that I think is really, I mean, Lafayette, you cannot pull one over on him. But he says like, what the fuck is wrong with you, Tara? Are you even in there? Like he is the only person to realize that this is not her. Something is going on here. And he has called it out about Eggs many times and he says it to Marianne like, I don't know what you are, but like I know that it is nothing good.
Lafayette is so perceptive and he's also had enough of his own like entanglements with the supernatural, so he's still dealing with his own very like heavy set of baggage regarding stuff like that. So I think he is like especially tuned in to things that are like not okay and clearly not right. And I fucking hate Letty Mae, like on the record, very much hate her, but I do appreciate her showing up for this. Because she is a deeply selfish person. And the fact that she even showed up is honestly surprising to me. But I know that this isn't Eggs' fault any more than it's Tara's fault. Like he is under the influence of Marianne. It's not his fault. But I do appreciate I did get some sort of enjoyment out of Lafayette. Yes. Just fucking bodying him. Just love kicking the shit out. Like it's not even a contest.
No.
And I love that mostly because I think I like it mostly because of Eggs' kind of like vaguely homophobic insults to Lafayette earlier when Lafayette was like, I'm gonna beat your ass, and he was like, oh, you're gonna take your eyelashes off first? These kinds of homophobic insults at Lafayette, and then just getting his ass totally handed to him by Lafayette is satisfying.
He got his ass kicked by Lafayette when he was being possessed by Marianne. Like he had full black eyes, and so that means he was at the height of whatever power he can get from Marianne, and Lafayette not still holding himself his ass. Back. Yeah. So incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is pretty awful. Like, Eggs and Tara physically attacking Letty Mae and Lafayette. Like, it's awful to watch. I'm glad when it's over. And Lafayette.
The way that
wins,
Tara screams when she's being carried, it's scary.
It's horrible.
It's scary.
And Marianne thinks that Tara will be back and that she will be bringing Lafayette and Letty Mae with her. So that's like really scary. And I hope that that doesn't happen. And Marianne just continues to do the most all over town.
Marianne is officially not the vibe anymore. Like, she was the vibe for a little while. I appreciate a little bit of hedonism. But she's officially, I think we can remove her from the vibe consideration, because she's doing a little too much.
She's doing way too much. She gets the whole Merlot's crowd, you know, black-eyed, going after Sam, who they can't find because he turned into a fly and escaped jail.
Speaking of Sam, I guess we're going to go there next, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Sam being a fly, number one, that was a stroke of luck for him to have that fly in there, because we know that he has to, like, look at the animal or, like, have it in his head, whatever, to turn. Right when Marianne showed up, that was really great. But I don't know why this is so stupid, because obviously, like, nothing happened to him. But, like, for some reason, the idea of him flying around town as a fly is just really stressful to me. So I'm like, a bird, a bug, any other kind of creature could come along at any point and just eat you. And then that's it.
Yeah. And I'm sure that it's not that technical when he's changing, but flies do not have a long lifespan.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, does he... I don't know. I need to see this put to the test. Like, if something were to try to eat him as a fly, would it just kind of trigger his ability and send him back into a human body? And if so, would he be in the middle of the air when that happened? Mm-hmm. I don't know. The whole thing seems dangerous. Also, because he is the literal fly on the wall in the room, watching Marianne and Tara and Eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that Marianne has the ability to, like, trigger his power. So, and we know that she can probably sense him. I mean, she was, I guess, thankfully distracted enough to not. But that was a very ballsy thing for him to do, I think.
Yeah, and
fly right into the lion's den.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun when, like, the camera is, like, following the fly. You're like, oh, that's him. And then he goes to Andy, the only other person who, like, clocks at something and Bontom is incorrect. And I think that they need to get Lafayette.
Clearly.
Like, they need to bring him in. You guys need to talk about everything that you know and have observed.
Yeah, Sam saw Lafayette throw down and... Mm-hmm. Saw that Lafayette knows that, like, something hinky's going on. So, like, he's a clear ally. Go get him.
Yes. So I guess Sam and Andy mess around next week.
Yeah. Sam and Andy mess around. All right. Shall we move on to True Blood's cutest couple?
The world's cutest couple, Hoyt and Jessica, working through the revelations and implications of Jessica's hymen.
Regenerating hymen, which is not a storyline that I love.
I don't love it either.
So it's not great. But
I was just going to say, like, as Hoyt says, intercourse ain't the only way to have sex. So
he literally could not be more perfect.
I know. He also says this cute thing about, like, all the things that they, like, have to try. Like, I didn't write it down, but two people that are not experienced, like, aren't experienced, like, get into a sexual relationship and then do a bunch of weird shit together. Like, I just think that that's such a cute concept.
It's very sweet. It's like very
the,
sweet.
Like, the explorer phase. I just, it's adorable.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody should have that.
I love his, too, his, when she's talking about how her, like, sleeping space is not very comfortable. And he's like, I'll have to build us a tricked out double wide.
I know. It, like, I he's joking and it's cute. He's, like, laughing but serious, I think. Like, it is, like, a joke, but he would.
He 1,000% would. Yeah.
But it is so just, like, cute and thoughtful for him to immediately be thinking about, like, building them a home that has, like, a space for her to rest during the day.
Because he's in it.
Yes, like thinking about the fact that like their long-term needs are going to be something different than his, and he's putting thought to that, and I just think it rules.
Yeah.
And fully he agree. Says, I don't want to ever hear you talk about breaking up, which is crazy because they've been on like 1.5 dates, but it's okay. I don't care.
They are both just like so immediately in it, and that's like... It's the shine of, like, first love, you know, and it's so nice that they're both so, like sweet.
Open
I don't
this?
Know. Like, yeah, yeah, I just love that. So Hoyt finally confronts his mom.
Yeah.
And that goes about as well as one can imagine.
It doesn't go well, like, between them, but it is such a great move. For Hoyt, finally calling out his mom, just listing all the things that she hates, which by like our standards is just like stupid shit that you should like. It ranges from petty to like legitimately very problematic. You know, he says that she hates, you know, like colored people or however he phrases it. And she says that's a secret, which like kind of gave me a chuckle. But I was also like, that is fucked up.
It is. Yeah. And he's like, see, like, full of hate. And she goes, oh, it's not my fault. It's the way I was raised up. But it's like, look at your son. He was clearly raised up that same way. And he, by some miracle, managed to get away from it. So it's like just bullshit from her. And he even brings up, like, you have hated every girl I've ever liked. Like, she's one of those, like, creepy boy moms, you know, that, like, just has a death grip on her son and treats their son like they're romantic partner almost, like with those same levels of expectations in the relationship, and it's fucked up, and he does need to get out of there.
Yeah, and he's not a baby, he's a grown-ass man. And I'm like, I'm glad that you know that, Hoyt.
Well, he even says, like, I have just played along with this shit for a long time because, like, you know, he felt like she needed that.
Yeah, and he didn't have anything else going on, really. But
exactly.
Now he does.
He's like, exactly. And he's got confidence from his new relationship, too. He's got somebody else that he loves that he can dote on. And, you know, he's not willing to play these games with his mom anymore. Finally.
So they all go to dinner. It is quite awkward. Maxine is apparently 20 minutes late for reasons not on her own, and it is so awkward. And Jessica is just trying her best.
Yeah.
She's trying so hard. And she is so honest with, like, Maxine in a way that I would never be with somebody who hated me, telling her, you know, honestly, that she was turned into a vampire against her will, and like she does not have a family anymore, which, you know, you don't have to have your glasses on to read between those lines, saying like, I would love to be a part of your family because I love your son. But yeah, Maxine's not having any of that.
And you think for a second that she seems for almost a second to be like, oh, well, I'm very sorry about that. But then immediately, immediately she's like, but you can't give my son what he needs or what he wants, a future and children, which as you pointed out in the notes is probably the first time that she's actually really conceptualized that and come to that realization.
I'm sort of reading into this a little bit more, but because we know that Jessica was brought up in like a really conservative religious upbringing, I just assume that she thought that her life would be school, marriage, babies. And so I doubt it even crossed her mind that having like biological human children would be off the table, because that is just the end of her path. Like that's mm-hmm. something that in my read of Jessica is like so just not possible to be removed, you know. It's just ingrained yeah. in how she envisioned her life, and she was very young when she was turned into a vampire. She hasn't been one for very long. So yeah, I mean, I think that we can say that this is the first time that this has occurred to Jessica, which is really, really heartbreaking. But you know, we got vampire rights out here. You can maybe adopt kids someday. I don't know for sure, but you can definitely have proteges or whatever they call them. Progenies.
Mm-hmm. Progenies. There we go. Yeah. 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 She could make her own vampires, mm-hmm. I guess. But yeah, it's, and even if it's like, you know, the idea of having children one day is something that she, is an idea that she, like you said, just kind of took for granted, mm-hmm. just as a concept because it was like a given. And maybe she never even really wanted that, but mm-hmm. still, like, whether you want it or not, to come to that realization that this thing that you had taken advantage of or taken for granted as like an assumed, like, for sure part of your life is suddenly you realize that that's been taken away from you, whether you wanted it really yeah. or not.
Because it would be
it's
one
still,
thing
it's
for,
still hard.
It would be one thing for her to realize that as a human, it wasn't her desire to have a family in that way. Like, that could be that realization and that decision could be heartbreaking on its own. But the idea that this is just yet another thing that has been taken from her, whether she wanted it or not, like, her choice is taken.
Exactly. I think that's the thing, is whether you want kids or not. Mm-hmm. And like that can be true for, you know, non-vampire
yes.
people as well, that like, you know, maybe you don't want kids, but if you find out that you can't, when that choice is taken away from you, that can still be really hard to deal with, even if it's not a choice you would have made for yourself anyway. Just when your choices are taken away, that's not, mm-hmm. that's not an easy thing to deal with, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. But if Jessica wants to have a family, I think that right now at this moment, I believe that Hoyt would figure out some way to make that happen for her.
I was going to say, if Jessica really wants a family, I think she and Hoyt can adopt me, a 39-year-old yeah, no woman, and I will be happy.
I think we did it.
I think we did too. It does feel weird that we're ending on this and not like the big Godric. Somebody needs to like Frankenstein this episode together so that it's in an order that makes more sense. I was just, you know, this is what happens when you're just following the template and not really putting that much thought into the order of your notes.
Oh, well, I mean, we can talk about Godric again now because we can talk about the cliffhanger, which like, it's just.
Right. It's really hard because, like, in terms of cliffhangers and, like, the big, exciting, game-changing endings, it's not. Mm-hmm. What it is something much more quiet and just kind of tragic and devastating and beautiful. And because of that, I think, you know, personally, it ranks really high for me in terms mm-hmm. of episode endings. But in terms of cliffhangers, right, it doesn't. So ranking this is really hard.
Yeah, so I wonder, like, is it okay if we were gonna rank it as a cliffhanger? Like, it would be near the bottom, but that feels disrespectful. But is it more disrespectful?
It feels
to
so
leave
disrespectful.
It off the list entirely. But it's like, yeah. On the other hand, this
like I would put it up with Bran.
Is,
you know,
not
like
fulfilling the prompt.
Yeah, this is. I don't want to have to make this decision because I cannot be like clear-headed about it. I don't want to put it at the bottom and I don't want to not include it. So I'm going to put it in somebody else's hands.
So it has to go.
I can't be like.
It has to go at the top. It has mm-hmm. to. And if if somebody wants to change it, they can do that because
they can fight me for it.
We
because
don't all record these episodes together, and it's just a shared Google Doc.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, you know, I was looking over that doc last night, I think, and I was like, why is this down here? Why, you know, I was like disputing internally
you
some of these rankings. So you know what? If I don't know if I have to deal with the other rankings, you guys can deal with this one.
Yeah, I think it's great. What is the most chaotic?
Yeah, I think it's the Lafayette and Letty Mae v. Tara and Eggs WWE SmackDown.
So, I mean, so true. So true. I had Steve and Sarah being unable to keep it together for just one news broadcast.
She's like, can you let me finish a thought?
He's like, you're done. You were done. Oh, very funny. Yeah. What's
so you take this one. What is Melissa? You tell me, what is the most horny thing in this episode? Because you are right.
I said that the most horny thing in this episode is Dream Eric, you know, and me because of Dream.
Yeah.
Eric.
This is going to be the royal me because it's also me.
Yes.
This is this is all of us.
And all of us. Dream Eric. So dreamy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So do we want to talk about the... Yeah, yeah.
Go yeah, I have a little bit of book stuff. It's a spoiler for the book. It really wouldn't be a spoiler for the show, but, you know, take this as you will and listen or don't. You know, whatever. But, so, the person that is being held at the Fellowship of the Summit is this vampire called Godfrey. And I haven't finished the book, so I don't know if he is Eric's maker or not, but what he is like a serial, like, child molester and murderer. And so Sookie is very much like, okay, but actually though, we do need to put this vampire into the sun because, like, he did, yeah, he just saved me, but this is also, like, really bad stuff that he was doing. And so he does actually need to meet the sun, and he does, and Sookie stays with him while he dies, which is interesting in the book because, you know, he was a really bad person and she's very conflicted about, you know, saying that someone deserves to die. But, you know, her humanity and empathy is still there. She stays with him because he saved her and all that. But yeah, it's not Godrick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like there is someone we meet in the book. So it's been a long time since I read these. So, like, and I'm not doing a current reread, but I feel like we do meet Eric's maker at some point in the book. But he's either like an older kind of like not like made as a teenager, or maybe he was made as a teenager, but it's just a very different character. Just not Godrick. And so what they did in either case, if Godfrey was supposed to be Eric's maker or if some other character later on is supposed to be Eric's maker, I think what they chose to do with the Godrick-Godfrey situation is a vast improvement on what was in the books, because this makes it just so much more impactful.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and someday, hopefully, I'll keep reading and we'll meet Eric's maker again.
Well, on that note, I think we did the thing.
We did it. We did it.
All right. Do you have plugs?
Yeah, you can find me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd, say Mel Yellow.
You can find me on Instagram at RageyCakes, and you can find my YA podcast, sometimes YA podcast, at ActyAge on Instagram and other places. And As always, a huge thanks to DJ Empirical for our incredible theme music. You can find the podcast on Instagram and Blue Sky at Fangbangers Pod, and you can email us your chaotic, horny thoughts on True Blood, please, to fangbangerspod@gmail.com. I'm Tasia, and my blood type is clumsy, stupid, and mean.
I'm Melissa, and my blood type is hating your hair.
Bye.